Hi, Dave Emery here. This is For the Record program number 978, the JFK assassination and the Vietnam War. This is being recorded on October 4th of the year 2017. A fair amount of public and media attention has been devoted in recent weeks to the Ken Burns documentary series on PBS about the Vietnam War. I thought that by way of supplementing that analysis and correcting the established historical version of America's tragic involvement in Vietnam that has it, that there was continuity of Vietnam policy from JFK to LBJ, I would delve back into the archives going back to November 15th of 1983. We are going to listen to a portion of The Guns of November, Part 3, which in turn excerpts a couple of programs I recorded in June of 1981. In fact, not only was there no continuity between JFK's Vietnam policy and that of LBJ, but in fact, among the reasons that JFK was killed is because he was proposing against the wishes of the military high command to pull the U.S. out of Vietnam. That on top of his failure to provide air cover for the Bay of Pigs invasion and to invade Cuba during the Cuban Missile Crisis of 1962, in addition to his pursuit of détente with the former Soviet Union and his conclusion of the ban on atmospheric testing of nuclear weapons. This was one of the things that could be said to have been a straw that broke the camel's back when Kennedy went against the wishes of the military for a wider war in Southeast Asia and proposed a phased withdrawal. That was among the factors that sealed his fate. There was much more to the assassination of JFK than his Vietnam War policy, just as there was much more to the JFK assassination than Watergate, which we looked at in a recent series for the record, 961, 2, and 3. However, with public attention once more focused on the Vietnam War because of the Ken Burns series, I thought it would be useful to go back in time from our archives and listen to a presentation of the truth. It is sort of odd, well, curious to me to listen to this. I talk about Professor Peter Dale Scott, Professor Emeritus now of the University of California at Berkeley, as though he were an unknown personality. In 1983, that was relatively the case. He is not exactly a household name now, but he is certainly much better known now than he was in in November of 1983. We are, however, going back to November 15th of 1983 to listen to a portion of The Guns of November, Part 3. In addition to my own voice, you will also hear the voice of my brilliant and capable former co-host Nip Tuck, whose charming on-air abilities were fundamental to the successful realization of all of the archive shows on which he participated. He also had acquired a great deal of knowledge himself. This is from The Guns of November, Part 3, from June 15th of 1983.
Now, we're going to be talking about the Kennedy assassination of the Vietnam War, and we're going to be presenting a view of history which is going to contrast rather sharply with sort of the views both on the Kennedy assassination and on the Vietnam War. Generally speaking, conventional history has it that there was a continuity of policy from Kennedy to Lyndon Johnson with regard to just about all things, including and particularly the Kennedy the Vietnam War, rather, and that is not the case. Now, we're going to be dealing with an essay here called The Kennedy Assassination and the Vietnam War. Now, that is an excerpt from a book called The War Conspiracy, authored by a University of California at Berkeley professor named Peter Dale Scott. Those of you who were tuned in last week may remember Ted Rubenstein, a fine researcher who works with us here on the station, and his discussions of Peter Dale Scott's work. Well, Peter's done some, who is, as I said, a professor at the University of California at Berkeley, has done some excellent research about the Pentagon Papers and about the relationship between the Pentagon Papers and the memoranda from which they were drawn up. In just a second, Nip Tuck's going to read you an introduction here from Peter Dale Scott's essay. Be informed that the book from which this section is excerpted was suppressed, basically. It was called The War Conspiracy by Bobbs Merrill. Supposed to have come out in 72. It basically really never came out. It was suppressed, and part of the reason why you're going to see in just a couple of minutes. Before Nip Tuck gets into the editor's introduction, and by the way, the essay here is going to come from a book called The Assassinations, Dallas and Beyond. That's an excellent anthology about the Kennedy and other assassinations. The Assassinations, Dallas and Beyond is published in softcover by the Vintage Press, copyrighted 1976, and edited by Peter Dale Scott, the author of The Kennedy Assassination and the Vietnam War, Paul L. Hock, and Russell Stettler. Hock, H-O-C-H, Stettler, S-T-E-T-L-E-R. Now, this is going to be a very, very complicated discussion that we're going to be getting into, not to try and intimidate you, but you're going to be hearing discussion of some National Security Action Memoranda, and even before Nip Tuck gets into the introduction here, I'm going to try and lay out the basic numbers here for you so that you can locate yourself in Nip's introduction and in the weighty tape segments that are going to follow here. National Security Action Memoranda. Prefix these NSAM. NSAM standing for National Security Action Memorandum. Okay, we're going to have four National Security Action Memoranda here to keep in mind. Okay, so jot these down. First of all, NSAM 111. NSAM 111, that's dated November 22nd, 1961, 2 years to the day before Kennedy is assassinated. Okay, NSAM 111, 11-22-61. Second memorandum, NSAM 249, NSAM 249, that's dated June 25th of 1963. Okay, the third memorandum is NSAM 263. NSAM 263, and that is dated October 11th, 1963, 10-11-63, and there are two other dates that we're going to talk about that, and in connection with that. And the fourth memorandum is NSAM 273, NSAM 273, and there appears to be a little bit of a conflict on the date. NSAM 273 was formally issued on 11-26-63. But it was put together at a meeting of the National Security Council on November 24th, 1963. That was 2 days after Kennedy was killed, and it was the evening of the morning on which Ruby executed Oswald, okay? So four memoranda. 111 from 11-22-61, 249 from 6-25-63, 263 from 10-11-63, and 273 from 11-26-63. Now here's what they did. NSAM 111 committed the United States to helping the South Vietnamese And it pointedly avoided, Kennedy in this memorandum pointedly avoided committing us to helping the South Vietnamese win. Now, this is more than a semantic distinction, a trifling semantic distinction here. There's the difference between committing us to helping the South Vietnamese and helping the South Vietnamese to win, basically, was the difference between a limited and diplomatic approach to the seeking a limited and diplomatic commitment, a limited commitment with a diplomatic solution to the Vietnam War, and an open-ended commitment and a military solution. Two basic and sharply contrasting ways of dealing with the Vietnam situation. Kennedy avoided ever committing us to helping the South Vietnamese win, and there was a long, complicated battle within his administration over these words, symbolized by commitment to the objective. Much more than just a semantic trifle, as I mentioned here, because it really was the difference between a diplomatic solution and a military solution. Okay, NSAM 249 from June 25th of 1963. That was Kennedy's last official document dealing with covert action against North Vietnam, and it pointedly withheld, it suspended all covert action against North Vietnam pending a review of policy. And that was the last official Kennedy document on the subject. And the significance of this, of course, is that it was covert action against North Vietnam, which was to result in the Gulf of Tonkin incident and our eventual involvement in the war. National Security Action Memorandum 263. Now, that basically provided for a phased withdrawal program from Vietnam intended not only to help get our troops out, but also to force then South Vietnamese President Diem to the conference table. NSAM 263 provided for a phased withdrawal of troops from between 1,000 and 1,500 troops, and that was, as I said, October 11th, 1963. Now, NSAM 273, put together 2 days after Kennedy was killed and issued 4 days after his death, that canceled basically all of the previous three memoranda. It committed us to helping the South Vietnamese win as opposed to helping the South Vietnamese, thereby canceling, in effect, NSAM 111. It basically provided for covert action against North Vietnam, whereas Kennedy had suspended it, thereby negating the effect of Kennedy's NSAM 249. It canceled the troop withdrawal and committed us to aid levels at least as high as in the Diem regime, and gave indications that we should explore other means of pursuing the war and carrying it north, thereby negating NSAM 263. So keep those in mind. We're going to talk some more about them before we get into the tape here, but it's very complicated, and you really got to have those four memoranda down in order to locate yourself in the maelstrom that's going to follow here.
I think you just did the intro for me. One other thing to mention, and this is crucially important because this is essentially the thesis of what we're talking about here. If Mr. Scott's research proves as accurate as it seems to, that what we are essentially talking about is not only the false story, but we're looking at the very real possibility that if John F. Kennedy had not been assassinated, we would not have the Vietnam War hanging on the American consciousness the way it has, for a variety of reasons. And it's very possible the Vietnam War would have been over by 1964. This would have made quite a difference in the American body politic.
One small point that I forgot to mention, the Pentagon Papers themselves, what they were, the Pentagon Papers were a history of the Vietnam War put together by the Pentagon, and they were put together at the request of then Secretary of Defense Robert McNamara under President Johnson, and they were compiled from the various memoranda, including the four talked about above. And these were the Pentagon Papers, okay? So because that's essentially what Peter Dale Scott's going to be talking about here, and we'll talk about the Pentagon Papers and their relationship to Watergate in the second half of the broadcast.
All right. Now, this is reading again from Peter Dale Scott's essay, The Kennedy Assassination of the Vietnam War. This is from the book, The Assassinations, Dallas and Beyond, and this was written in 1972 by Mr. Scott. It was the received wisdom of American commentators in the first months of Lyndon Johnson's presidency that the assassination of President Kennedy would have little impact on U.S. policies, domestic or foreign. President Johnson's first speech to Congress on November 27, 1963, quote, "Let us continue," and his retention of Kennedy's top advisors both served to underline this appearance of continuity. In retrospect, it has become clear that in at least one area of U.S. policy planning, Vietnam, this appearance was illusory. On November 20th, 1963, the Kennedy administration had publicly announced plans to withdraw between 1,000 and 1,300 troops from Vietnam by the year's end. The Johnson administration not only quietly canceled these plans, but also replaced them with high-level planning for covert escalation and expansion of the war into North Vietnam. One of the Pentagon Papers, published in 1971, attributes this abrupt reversal of direction to a perception, new in December of 1963, of how close the Saigon regime was to collapse. Peter Dale Scott, in his researches into the Pentagon Papers, has reached a different and more disturbing conclusion. Scott argues that the reversal was in fact authorized by a secret National Security Action Memorandum, NSAM 273, at an unofficial emergency meeting on November 24, 1963, only 2 days after President Kennedy's assassination. As Scott reconstructed the text of NSAM 273 from partial quotations and references, it represented a departure from past policy in at least five respects. One, an assertion for the first time that the, quote, central objective, unquote, of the United States was to assist South Vietnam, quote, to win, rather than simply to, quote, help South Vietnam. Two, a quiet cancellation of the November 20th plans to withdraw troops, disguised by a public reaffirmation of a previously announced, quote, objective with respect to withdrawal. Three, authorization of planning for a coherent program of covert activities in 1964, and for exploring the feasibility of initiating a wider war against North Vietnam. Four, an order to, quote, all senior officers of the government, unquote, to avoid any criticism of U.S. Vietnam policy. Five, a directive to the State Department to develop a, quote, case which would demonstrate Hanoi's control of the Viet Cong. Scott's analysis recognizes that some of these bureaucratic shifts of language were subtle, and that the result was to initiate, rather than fulfill, a reversal of policy. He argues, however, that the consequences of the November 24th NSAM, while more symbolic than practical, were well understood, and that they ended a major debate over escalation versus phased disengagement, which had for some weeks caused divisions in both Washington and Saigon.
Okay, now we're going to be going to a couple of segments of tape here in just a second. Let me restate what you're going to be hearing in the first of these two here. Again, you'll hear these memoranda a lot. Don't worry about it, because it's going to, I think you'll find it useful. The discussion is pretty weighty here. Now, basically, in the first of these two segments, which comes from a Hard Rain show, it's a program that I do here on KFJC and have been doing for some time. It was from a Hard Rain show of June 10th, 1981. Now, what you're going to be hearing about here are essentially two main items here. First of all, you're going to be hearing how NSAM 273 reversed the long-standing trend in the Kennedy administration to avoiding an unlimited, open-ended military commitment to South Vietnam. Basically, NSAM 111, which was Kennedy's sort of official document on the subject, clearly set his Vietnam policy in a limited and ultimately diplomatic direction. Kennedy was pointedly avoiding an open-ended, unlimited military commitment to Vietnam. This was symbolized by only helping the South Vietnamese, not committing us to helping the South Vietnamese win the war, or a commitment to the overriding objective. These words became to symbolize, although they sound like very unimportant distinctions, they came to symbolize a central debate as to whether we were there to help the South Vietnamese or whether we were there to basically blow North Vietnam out of the water.
One of the key things to keep in mind is that many people have attributed this statement to Lyndon Johnson, that he did not want to be the first president, he did not want to be the president who'd go down in history as losing Vietnam. So this is where the word win becomes a very key point. It is not merely to help the Vietnamese, who were barely capable of keeping their own country under any kind of control and really had very little popular support, but he was basically committed to winning in Vietnam, and he was not going to be the president who was going to lose Vietnam. So we've changed from a focus of helping an ally to winning a war.
Exactly. And the second thing we're going to be talking about, you're going to hear rather in this tape segment here, concerns the way in which NSAM 273 reversed NSAM 263. Now, there are three dates to remember in connection with NSAM 263. It was decided upon at a meeting on October 5th, 1963, which in turn was acting upon some troop withdrawal recommendations which were projected by then commanding officer in Vietnam, Maxwell Taylor, and Secretary of Defense McNamara. Kennedy asked for an estimate on when troops could be withdrawn. That estimate came on October 2nd. The decision to withdraw 1,000 to 1,500 troops was arrived at on the 5th, formalized in a memorandum on the 11th. Now, this is important because the language of some of the National Security Memoranda, as well as the Pentagon Papers, refer to maintaining the status quo ante October 2nd. That, as we're going to see, is a deliberate attempt to mislead. It's to make it appear as if there was a continuity of policy from Kennedy to Johnson. But the status quo ante October 2nd was in fundamental contradiction with Kennedy's policy because he reversed it as of the 5th. This formalized on the 11th. And pay attention to the tricky language, because the Pentagon Papers themselves, as well as the memoranda from which they were concocted, apparently go out of their way to mislead with regard to policy from Kennedy to Johnson. So those are the things you're going to be hearing about in this tape segment from June 10th, 1981. Beginning this evening with the first of our two main topics of discussion, the manner in which NSAM 273 committed us to helping the South Vietnamese win the war. The significance of this semantic distinction, basically, as I said, we were previously committed to helping the South Vietnamese. The significance of this commitment to helping the South Vietnamese win is described by Peter Dale Scott as follows. He writes, in the Kennedy assassination of the Vietnam War, while noting that the stated objectives, unquote, of the new covert operations plan against North Vietnam were unlikely to be fulfilled by the O plan itself, Mr. Gelb, like the rest of the Pentagon study authors, fails to inform us what these stated objectives were. The answer lies in the central objective defined by the first paragraph of NSAM 273. It remains the central objective of the United States and South Vietnam to assist the people and government of that country to win their contest against the externally directed and supported communist conspiracy. The test of all U.S. decisions and actions in this area should be the effectiveness of their contribution to this purpose. Oh, by the way, Leslie Gelb, mentioned by Peter Dale Scott, was one of the authors of the Pentagon Papers and is now National Security Editor for the New York Times. Now, Scott goes on here to point out that the commitment to helping the South Vietnamese win ended a long-standing and apparently fairly lively debate within the Kennedy administration concerning the nature of our commitment in Southeast Asia. Some favored a limited and political commitment in Vietnam, that is, to assist, and some favored an unlimited and military commitment that would have committed us to helping the South Vietnamese win. Scott describes this. To understand this bureaucratic prose, we must place it in context. Ever since Kennedy came to power, but increasingly since the Diem crisis and assassination, there had arisen serious bureaucratic disagreement as to whether the U.S. commitment in Vietnam was limited and political, to assist, or open-ended and military, to win. By its use of the word win, unquote, NSAM 273, among other things, ended a brief period of indecision and division when indecision itself was favoring the proponents of a limited and political strategy over those whose preference was an unlimited and military one. Scott goes on to point out the significance of the word commitment to the objective. He points out that President Kennedy had pointedly avoided the use of the word commitment, which was used in NSAM 273 2 days after he was killed. Scott writes, in this conflict, the seemingly innocuous word objective, unquote, had come, in the Aesopian double talk of bureaucratic politics, to be the test of a commitment. As early as May of 1961, when President Kennedy was backing off from a major commitment in Laos, he had willingly agreed with the Pentagon that the U.S. objective and concept of operations, unquote, was to prevent communist domination of South Vietnam. In November of 1961, however, Taylor, McNamara, and Rusk attempted to strengthen this language by recommending that we now take the decision to commit ourselves to the objective of preventing the fall of South Vietnam to communism, unquote. Note the use of the word commitment. McNamara had earlier concluded that this commitment to the clear objective, unquote, was the basic issue, adding that it should be accompanied by a warning of punitive retaliation against North Vietnam. Without this commitment, he added, we do not believe major U.S. forces should be introduced in South Vietnam, unquote. And Scott goes on to point out that Kennedy specifically rejected the use of the word commitment throughout the course of his administration and in all of his statements on his Vietnam policy. Despite this advice, Kennedy, after much thought, accepted all the recommendations for introducing U.S. units except for the commitment to the objective, unquote, which was the first recommendation of all. NSAM 111 of November 22, 1961, which became the basic document for Kennedy Vietnam policy, was issued without this first recommendation. Instead, he sent a letter to Diem on December 14th of 1961 in which the U.S. officially described the limited and somewhat ambiguous extent of its commitment. Quote, our primary purpose is to help your people. We shall seek to persuade the communists to give up their attempts of force and subversion, unquote. One compensatory phrase of this letter, the campaign supported and directed from the outside, unquote, became, as we shall see, a rallying point for the disappointed hawks in the Pentagon and was elevated to a new prominence in NSAM 273 paragraph 1's definition of a communist conspiracy. It would appear that Kennedy, in his basic policy documents after 1961, avoided any use of the word objective that might be equated to a commitment, unquote. The issue was not academic. As presented by Taylor in November of 1961, this commitment would have been open-ended, quote, to deal with any escalation the communists might choose to impose, unquote. In October of 1963, Taylor and McNamara tried once again. By proposing to link the withdrawal announcement about 1,000 men to a clearly defined and public policy objective, unquote, of defeating communism. Once again, Kennedy, by subtle changes of language, declined to go along. His refusal is the more interesting when we see that the word and the sense he rejected in October of 1963, which would have made the military objective, unquote, the overriding one, are explicitly sanctioned by Johnson's first policy document, NSAM 273 of 11-24-63. The second major point that I'd like to discuss this evening concerning NSAM 273 concerns the manner in which that document, and bear in mind this was 2 days after Kennedy was killed, canceled President Kennedy's announced plans to withdraw between 1,000 and 1,300 troops from Vietnam by the year's end. Now this troop withdrawal was envisioned by President Kennedy, who had sided with those who favored a limited and political commitment in Vietnam rather than unlimited and military, the significance of which we've discussed. Well, Kennedy had basically elected to begin a phased withdrawal of our troops in Vietnam as a means of pressuring President Diem to go to the conference table and to enact some social reforms which would have enhanced his popularity and the viability of his government. The significance of the troop withdrawal in committing the United States to a political solution to the Vietnam conflict is discussed by Peter Dale Scott in his essay here. Scott writes, by mid-1963, with the aggravating political crisis in Vietnam, the pressure to move ahead with withdrawal plans was increasing. This increased pressure was motivated not by military euphoria, unquote, if indeed it ever had been, but by political dissatisfaction. A State Department telegram from Rust to Lodge on August 29th of 1963 expresses the opinion that U.S. political pressures on Diem would be otherwise futile, quote, unless such talk included a real sanction, such as a threatened withdrawal of our support, it is unlikely that it would be taken seriously by a man who may feel that we are inescapably committed to an anti-communist Vietnam. And recall the significance of the word commitment we covered a little while ago. Continuing here with Scott's narrative, Pentagon paper 4B4 ignores this telegram as well, yet even it, in marked contrast to Leslie Gelb's summary and analysis of it, admits that part of the motivation behind the stress placed on U.S. force withdrawal, and particularly the seemingly arbitrary desire to effect the 1,000-man withdrawal by the end of 1963, apparently was as a signal to influence both the North Vietnamese and the South Vietnamese and set the stage for possible later steps that would help bring the insurgency to an end. Unquote. Basically, Scott goes on to point out that Kennedy had elected to go ahead with a troop withdrawal as part of a, as the main element, I should say, in a policy to pursue a political solution to the war. Now, on October 5th, Kennedy decided on this policy, that the troop withdrawal policy was formalized on with National Security Action Memorandum 263 on October 11th, and it was canceled by NSAM 273 of 1124. Now, on November 20th of 1963, at a meeting of the Joint Chiefs of Staff and the National Security Council in Honolulu, President Kennedy announced his October 5th decision that was formalized in NSAM 263 of 10-11-63. He announced this troop withdrawal, and apparently at that same meeting, an accelerated plan of troop withdrawal was also agreed to, that Kennedy had unequivocally elected to pursue the policy of phased withdrawal as a means to a political solution to the war. So his decision to do so was described by Scott as follows. As the president's questioner of October 31st was apparently aware, the issue was no longer whether 1,000 men would be withdrawn with a military assistance program reduction in fiscal 65 of $27 million, but whether the withdrawal program might not be accelerated by 6 months with a corresponding MAP aid reduction of $33 million in fiscal 1965. Planning for this second accelerated plan, unquote, had been stepped up after the October 5th decision which authorized the first. The issue was an urgent one, since the fiscal 1965 budget would have to be presented to Congress in January. The chronology of Pentagon Paper 4B4 on phased withdrawal of U.S. forces tells us that on November 20th, 2 days before the assassination, the Honolulu Conference secretly, quote, agreed that the accelerated plan, speed up of force withdrawal by 6 months directed by McNamara in October, should be maintained, unquote. In addition, the Honolulu Conference issued a press release which, according to the New York Times of November 21st, 1963, quote, reaffirmed the United States' plan to bring home about 1,000 of its 16,500 troops from South Vietnam by January 1st. Thus, the language of NSAM 273 of November 24th, by going back to the status quo ante-October 5th, was itself misleading, as is the careful selection from it in the Pentagon study. You recall that October 5th was basically the day on which Kennedy decided that troop withdrawal was the way to go, and that the proposition by Taylor and McNamara of October 2nd with regard to the objective of our withdrawal was basically simply a... that was more to do with the idea of a commitment. Basically, by, as Scott points out, by referring to the status quo ante October 5th, it nullified the NSAM 263 of October 11th. This is an important point. Picking up once again with Scott's narrative. Thus, the language of NSAM 273 of November 24th, by going back to the status quo ante October 5th, was itself misleading, as is the careful selection from it in the Pentagon study. By reverting to the informal objective of October 2nd, NSAM 273 paragraph 2 tacitly effaced both the formalized plans of NSAM 263 of October 5th and 11th announced on November 20th, and also the accelerated plan discussed and apparently agreed to on the 20th. NSAM 273 paragraph 6, according to most citations of it, would have explicitly maintained both military and economic programs at levels as high as those of the Diem regime. Now, the segment that you're going to be listening to next comes from a Hard Rain show from June 17th, 1981. Two basic points are going to be dealt with here. First of all, NSAM 249, the second of the four memoranda that I talked about at the top of this broadcast, that was from June 25th, 63, and it suspended all covert action against North Vietnam. It was the last official Kennedy document on the subject, and it's worth noting here for a couple of reasons. First of all, NSAM 273 of 1124 negated, in essence, NSAM 249. It scheduled covert action against North Vietnam under something known as SINCPAC O Plan 34-63. This is important because the America's involvement in Vietnam in terms of main ground units, American combat troops, began from something called the Gulf of Tonkin incident, in which American destroyers, which were supposedly in international waters, were allegedly attacked by North Vietnamese patrol boats. It later developed, when the Pentagon Papers were released, that they not only were the ships in North Vietnamese territorial waters, there was no firm evidence that they were ever attacked, and more importantly, it revealed that U.S. 7th Fleet units had been covering for South Vietnamese commando raids against North Vietnam for some time. This, according to the provisions of Plan 3463.
And that specifically a South Vietnamese commando raid had taken place on the in the area immediately adjoining where the Gulf of Tonkin incident took place, within 48 hours of the Gulf of Tonkin incident. So it was a direct, if you don't want to use the word provocation, a direct action had been taken in that area by the South Vietnamese under U.S. fleet cover within 48 hours of the events that we know as the Gulf of Tonkin.
Now, in response to the Gulf of Tonkin incident, Congress passed something called the Gulf of Tonkin Resolution, and what this enabled President Johnson to do was to take any steps that he felt would be necessary in order to protect U.S. forces in the region. Under that, I guess you could call it a loophole, Johnson basically committed over 500,000 U.S. troops to Vietnam using the Gulf of Tonkin Resolution, which came from the Gulf of Tonkin incident, which came from Plan 3463, which came from NSAM 273. Now, it's worth noting here that, as Peter Dale Scott notes, in June of 1963, when NSAM 249 was generated by Kennedy suspending covert action against Vietnam, apparently North Vietnamese and right-wing U.S. sources agree that covert action against North Vietnam, which had been suspended, was resumed in that month. So what we really see here is the intelligence establishment of the United States, or the national security apparatus, once again declaring its functional independence from presidential and constitutional authority, and this is something we've seen in the past with regard to the Kennedy assassination.
That's right. We discussed it at some length in the first broadcast in terms of the Bay of Pigs, the U-2, and a variety of other things. So, again, that is something else to bear in mind here, as Dave put it, and it is a key point, is the independence of the intelligence function.
Okay, one more small point here that's going to be dealt with in this tape segment you're about to listen to is the fact that the language, not only of the Pentagon memoranda themselves, the National Security Action Memoranda, but also of the Pentagon Papers, the Pentagon history compiled from these memoranda, go out of their way to mislead in the language they use to make it appear as though there was a continuity of policy from Kennedy to Johnson, whereas in fact, as we're seeing, there wasn't. But this is important because, once again, another level of cover-up here, apparently.
All right. Now, this is, once again, a tape segment from Dave Emery's Hard Rain. This program was originally aired on June 17th, 1981.
Well, as I said a couple of minutes ago, we're going to begin tonight by looking at a very important respect in which NSAM 273 reversed President Kennedy's Vietnam policy. That is, NSAM 273, for the first time, authorized covert actions against North Vietnam. This, of course, was a major contributing factor to the Gulf of Tonkin incident, which resulted in the Gulf of Tonkin resolution used by President Johnson to involve us in Vietnam and to justify every phase of our escalation in that war. Continuing just a minute here, I'm going to wet my whistle. Okay, proceeding now. Scott begins his discussion of the authorization for covert action that is contained in NSAM 273 by discussing the pressures that had been put on President Kennedy to escalate the nature of our covert operations. He was under a great deal of pressure to intervene frankly rather than surreptitiously and to move from a limited to an unlimited commitment in the area. Scott writes, "The inclusion in planning of MACV was in keeping with the Kennedy Doctrine enacted after the Bay of Pigs fiasco, that responsibility for any large paramilitary operation, wholly or partly covert, is properly the primary responsibility of the Department of Defense," unquote. Before November 26, 1963, U.S. covert operations in Asia had always, at least in theory, been secret and plausibly deniable, unquote. These were the two criteria set for itself in 1948 by the National Security Council when it first authorized CIA covert operations under its Other Functions and Duties Clause in the 1947 National Security Act. Throughout 1963, the Kennedy administration was under considerable pressure, public as well as within its personnel, to go beyond these guidelines and intervene frankly, unquote, rather than surreptitiously, unquote.
In May of 63, this appeal for escalation was publicly joined by William Henderson, an official of Sekone Mobile, which had a major economic interest in Southeast Asia, to an appeal to move from a limited, unquote, to an unlimited commitment in this area. The covert operations planning authorized by NSAM 273 seems to have been the threshold for at least the first of these policy changes, if not both. In contrast, both were wholly incompatible with the Kennedy administration's last movements toward withdrawal. In May of 1963, McNamara had authorized changes in long-range planning, quote, to accomplish a more rapid withdrawal, unquote. And on November 20th in Honolulu, as we have seen, the resulting initial withdrawal of 1,000 men was supplemented by the so-called accelerated plan. It is hard to imagine at either date the same man or men contemplating a new 34A elaborate program of acts which threatened war to coincide with an accelerated withdrawal of U.S. forces. Next, Scott goes on here to describe SINGPAC O-Plan 34-63. That, by the way, was the formal name for the covert operations program against North Vietnam. Scott writes here, the next sentence of study 4C2A tells us that SINGPAC O-Plan 34-63 was approved by the Joint Chiefs of Staff on the 9th of September, unquote. This approval, unquote, means only that at the very height of the paralytic standoff between the political and military factions, the Joint Chiefs forwarded one more tendentious military alternative for consideration by McNamara and above all by the 303 Committee, about whom the author is silent. One Gravel Pentagon Papers chronology, 3141, suggests that Kennedy and his White House staff never were consulted by McNamara about O-Plan 34-63. Next, Scott goes on to describe here how the last policy document of Kennedy's administration with respect to covert operations against North Vietnam delayed any covert action against North Vietnam. That document is National Security Action Memorandum 249 of June 25th of 1963. And Scott also points out that in the very month that document was formulated and approved, June of 1963, apparently the CIA had undertaken covert operations against North Vietnam on its own without Kennedy's approval or knowledge. Scott also indicates that the CIA not only undertook operations against North Vietnam, but operations in Laos and Cambodia as well, which led to escalations of the fighting in both of those areas. Scott points out further that apparently the Chinese nationalists or Kuomintang were involved with the CIA and with their illicit escalation of covert operations in North Vietnam, Laos, and Cambodia. Scott goes on to comment here as follows. The same Gravel chronology reports that CIA cross-border operations, radically curtailed after the 1962 Geneva agreements on Laos, were resumed by November 19, 1963, one day before the Honolulu conference, even though the first presidential authorization cited for such renewed operations is Johnson's NSAM 273 of November 26th. Kennedy's NSAM 249 of June 25th, 1963, in rejecting states' proposals for actions against North Vietnam, had authorized planning for operations against Laos conditional on further consultation, and it had urged review of whether, quote, additional U.S. actions should be taken in Laos before any action be directed against North Vietnam, unquote. Although the overall language of NSAM 249, which refers to an unpublished memorandum, is obscure, this wording seems to indicate that in June of 1963, Kennedy had delayed authorization of any action against North Vietnam. Yet North Vietnamese and right-wing U.S. sources agree that in this very month of June of 1963, covert operations against North Vietnam were resumed by South Vietnamese commandos. These actions had the approval of General Harkins in Saigon, but not, according to the U.S. sources, of President Kennedy. The same sources, further corroborated by the Pentagon Papers, both linked these raids to increased military cooperation between South Vietnam and the Chinese nationalists, whose own commandos began turning up in North Vietnam in increasing numbers. It has also been suggested that Kuomintang influences and their sympathizers in Thailand and the CIA were behind the right-wing political assassinations and military offensive, which in 1963 led to a resumption of fighting in Laos with new American supplies and full U.S. political support, unquote. This autumn of 1963 military offensive in Laos coincided with escalation of activities against Prince Sihanouk in Cambodia by the CIA-supported Khmer Sarai in South Vietnam. After two infiltrating Khmer Sarai agents had been captured and had publicly confessed, Cambodia on November 19, 1963, severed all military and economic ties with the United States, and 1 month later broke off diplomatic relations. All of these disturbing events suggest that in late 1963, covert operations were beginning to escape the political limitations both internal and international established during the course of the Kennedy administration. During the months of September and October, many established newspapers, including the New York Times, began to complain about the CIA's arrogation of power, and this concern was echoed in Congress by Senator Mansfield. The evidence now published in the Pentagon Papers, including Kennedy's NSAM 249 of June and the Gravel Chronology's testimony to the resumption of cross-border operations, also suggests that covert operations may have been escalated in defiance of the President's secret directives. If this chronology is correct, then Pentagon Study 4C2A's efforts to show continuity between the Kennedy and Johnson regimes suggests instead that President Kennedy had lost control of covert planning and operations. The last major point I'd like to go on to make in tonight's broadcast is the fact that not only did NSAM 273 reverse, in many significant respects, Kennedy's Vietnam policy, but the Pentagon Papers, the studies commissioned by then-Secretary of Defense Robert McNamara, as well as the original Pentagon memoranda from which they were compiled, go out of their way to deceive a would-be reader with respect to continuity of Vietnam policy from Kennedy to Johnson. There was not, as we have seen, such a continuity. However, the Pentagon Papers and the documents upon which they were based go out of their way to make it appear as if there was such a continuity. Peter Dale Scott describes this in the Kennedy assassination of the Vietnam War as follows. With respect to events in November of 1963, the bias and deception of the original Pentagon documents are considerably reinforced in the Pentagon studies commissioned by Robert McNamara. Nowhere is this deception more apparent than in the careful editing and censorship of the report of a Honolulu conference on November 20th of 1963 and of National Security Action Memorandum 273, which was approved 4 days later. Study after study is carefully edited so as to create a false illusion of continuity between the last 2 days of President Kennedy's presidency and the first 2 days of President Johnson's. The narrow division of the studies into topics as well as periods allows some studies to focus on the optimism, unquote, which led to plans for withdrawal on November 20th and 24th of 63, and others on the deterioration and gravity, unquote, which at the same meetings led to plans for carrying the war north. These incompatible pictures of continuous optimism or deterioration are supported generally by selective censorship and occasionally by downright misrepresentation. Scott goes on to cite a flagrant case of misrepresentation, quoting directly here from the Pentagon Papers. Scott relates, National Security Action Memorandum 273 approved 26th November 1963. The immediate cause for NSAM 273 was the assassination of President Kennedy 4 days earlier. Newly installed President Johnson needed to reaffirm or modify the policy lines pursued by his predecessor. President Johnson quickly chose to reaffirm the Kennedy policies. Emphasis should be placed, the document stated, on the Mekong Delta area, but not only in political terms, not only in military terms, Political, economic, social, educational, and informational activities must also be pushed. We should seek to turn the tide not only of battle, but of belief, unquote. Military operations should be initiated under close political control up to within 50 kilometers inside of Laos. U.S. assistance programs should be maintained at levels at least equal to those under the Diem government so that the new government of Vietnam would not be tempted to regard the U.S. as seeking to disengage. I'd like to interrupt Scott's narrative here to point out that, as we've seen, Kennedy had opted for a phased withdrawal of U.S. forces in Vietnam as a means of forcing the government of North Vietnam to the conference table in order to settle the war politically rather than militarily. So that last sentence there was a deliberate attempt at deception. Continuing here with Scott's quotation from the Pentagon Papers vis-a-vis NSAM 273. The same document also revalidated and planned... also revalidated the planned phased withdrawal of U.S. forces announced publicly in broad terms by President Kennedy shortly before his death. The objective of the United States with respect to withdrawal of U.S. military personnel remains as stated in the White House statement of October 2, 1963. I'd like to interrupt once again to point out that it was on October 5th of 1963 that Kennedy decided on the phased withdrawal of troops. That was formalized on October 11th of 63 and publicly announced on November 20th, at which time the accelerated withdrawal plan was agreed to. But so that the statement here of the objective of the United States withdrawal, that, by the way, refers to the concept of military victory that Kennedy had rejected. The objective of the withdrawal remains as stated in the White House statement of October 2nd of 63. Of course, October 2nd was before Kennedy had decided on phased withdrawal, so this is an example of verbal chicanery here, an attempt to, once again, mislead with respect to continuity of Vietnam policy from Kennedy to Johnson. Continuing once again with Scott's quotation from the Pentagon Papers. No new programs were proposed or endorsed. No increases in the level or nature of U.S. assistance suggested or foreseen. The emphasis was on persuading the new government in Saigon to do well those things which the fallen government was considered to have done poorly. NSAM 273 had, as described above, limited cross-border operations to an area 50 kilometers within Laos. Scott goes on to comment here. The reader is invited to check the veracity of this account of NSAM 273 against the text, as reconstructed from various sources in our Appendix A. If the author of this study is not a deliberate and foolish liar, then some superior had denied him access to the second and more important page of NSAM 273, which authorized planning for specific covert operations graduated in intensity against the DRV, unquote, i.e., North Vietnam. As we have seen, this covert operations planning soon set the stage for a new kind of war, not only through the celebrated 34A operations, which contributed to the Tonkin Gulf incidents, but also through the military's accompanying observations as early as December of 63 that only air attacks against North Vietnam would achieve these operations' stated objectives, unquote. And next, Scott goes on to refer to a man named Leslie Gelb, who is the author of the Pentagon studies, which have become known as the Pentagon Papers. Leslie Gelb is also the national security editor of the New York Times. Continuing here, Scott writes, Leslie Gelb, the director of the Pentagon Study Task Force and the author of the various and mutually contradictory study summaries, notes that with this planning, quote, a firebreak had been crossed, and the U.S. had embarked on a program that was recognized as holding little promise of achieving its stated objectives, at least in its early stages. We have argued that these crucial and controversial stated objectives proposed in SINCPAC's O-Plan 3463 of September 9th of 1963 were rejected by Kennedy in October of 1963 and first authorized by the first paragraph of National Security Action Memorandum 273. And Scott goes on here to describe the manner in which the Pentagon Papers deceive with regard to the Kennedy announcement of troop withdrawal on November 20th. We read part of this passage last week, but I think it's worth repeating. The Pentagon studies, supposedly disinterested reports to the Secretary of Defense, systematically mislead with respect to NSAM 273, which McNamara himself had helped to draft. Their lack of bona fides is illustrated by the general phenomenon that, as can be seen from our Appendix A, banal or misleading paragraphs like 2, 3, and 5 are quoted verbatim, sometimes over and over, whereas those preparing for an expanded war are either omitted or else referred to obliquely. The only study to quote a part of the paragraph dealing with North Vietnam does so from subordinate instructions. It fails to note that this language was authorized in NSAM 273. And study after study suggests, as did press reports at the time, that the effect of NSAM 273 paragraph 2 was to perpetuate what Mr. Gelb ill-advisedly calls the public White House promise in October, unquote, to withdraw 1,000 U.S. troops. In fact, the public White House statement on October 2nd was no promise, but a personal estimate attributed to McNamara and Taylor. As we have seen, Kennedy's decision on October 5th to implement this withdrawal, a plan authorized by NSAM 263 of October 11th, was not made public until the Honolulu Conference of November 20th, when an accelerated withdrawal program, about which Mr. Gelb is silent, was also approved. NSAM 273 was in fact approved on Sunday, November 24th, and its misleading opening paragraphs, including the meaningless reaffirmation of the objectives of the October 2nd withdrawal statement, were leaked to selected correspondents. Mr. Gelb, who should know better, pretends that NSAM 273 was intended primarily to endorse the policies pursued by President Kennedy and to ratify provisional decisions reached on November 20th in Honolulu, unquote. In fact, the secret effect of NSAM 273's sixth paragraph, which unlike the second was not leaked to the press, was to annul the NSAM 263 withdrawal decision announced 4 days earlier at Honolulu and also the accelerated withdrawal program. Both military and economic programs, it was emphasized, should be maintained at levels as high as those in the time of the GM regime, unquote. The source of this change is not hard to pinpoint. Of the eight people known to have participated in the November 24th reversal of the November 20th withdrawal decisions, five took part in both meetings. Of the three new officials present, the chief was Lyndon Johnson in his second full day and first business meeting as President of the United States. The importance of this second meeting, like that of the document it approved, is indicated by its deviousness. One can only conclude that NSAM 273 paragraph 2's public reaffirmation of an October 2nd withdrawal objective, unquote, coupled with 273 paragraph 6's secret annulment of an October 5th withdrawal plan, was deliberately deceitful. The result of the misrepresentations in the Pentagon studies and Mr. Gelb's summaries is, in other words, to perpetuate a deception dating back to NSAM 273 itself.
Basically, just boiling the whole thing down, although I think that Mr. Scott and Dave in his reading went over it pretty carefully, just to boil things down for you nicely, basically what we're looking at is a planned effort, and quite an effort it took also, and if you want to call it conspiracy, you can, but I think the facts show that whatever you call it, it was definite and deliberate, an attempt on the part of the Joint Chiefs of Staff and President Johnson and others to literally reverse the course of the Kennedy administration under the guise of continuing the Kennedy administration's response to Vietnam. I'm going to read one last thing here. This is from the same essay, from Peter Dale Scott's essay from the Assassinations Dallas and Beyond, the Kennedy Assassination and the Vietnam War is the name of the essay. And in this particular anthology, this is Mr. Scott's summing up paragraph. And it goes as follows. National Security Action Memorandum 273, it seems clear, was an important document in the history of the 1964 escalations, as well as in the reversal of President Kennedy's late and ill-fated program of Vietnamization by 1965. The systematic censorship and distortion of NSAM 273 in 1963 and again in 1971 by the Pentagon study and later by the New York Times raises serious questions about the bona fides of the Pentagon study. It also suggests that the Kennedy assassination was itself an important, perhaps a crucial, event in the history of the Indochina War.
That again from the Guns of November, Port 3, from November 15th of 1983, and once again, in addition to yours truly, you also heard the voice of my brilliant former co-host, Nip Tuck. In the decades since that program was recorded, there have been other books that have come out that have fleshed out our understanding of how the JFK assassination fundamentally reversed Kennedy's withdrawal program and plunged the U.S. into that conflict, deeper into that conflict, a conflict whose scars we bear to this day. Of course, even greater scars are borne by the Vietnamese people. JFK and Vietnam by Major John Newman. And in particular, I would recommend the book JFK and the Unspeakable by James Douglas. Two S's at the end of his last name. They will supplement what you heard. Peter Dale Scott has also published a number of works supplementing his earlier suppressed work from the never-released War Conspiracy. This concludes For the Record program number 978, the JFK assassination and the Vietnam War. This is being recorded on October 4th of the year 2017. I'm Dave Emery. Have fun.